News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan has denied reports that between 5,000 to 10,000 U.S. troops could be sent to the Middle East to defend against a potential threat by Iran. Referring to a Reuters report with a figure of 5,000 and an AP report with a figure of up to 10,000, Shanahan said both are inaccurate. VOA had reported that Shanahan and the top U.S. military officer, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, would provide the president with a wide range of options Thursday in response to rising tensions in the Middle East, including possibly sending thousands more U.S. troops to the region. Shanahan confirmed this ahead of his presidential briefing at the White House, telling reporters he was considering deploying more U.S. forces. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is suggesting an intervention by President Trump's family or staff after the White House meeting blow up yesterday. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Pelosi is openly questioning the president's fitness for office and says she's concerned for his well-being, a day after he said he will not work with Democrats while they investigate him.
Maybe he wants to take a leave of absence. I don't know.
At one point during a news conference, she joked about the 25th Amendment, the constitutional path for replacing a president. She says the White House is crying out for impeachment proceedings, suggesting that would help the president politically. Top House Republican Kevin McCarthy says Pelosi should know better.
I think that's irresponsible of the speaker to even say.
Both sides are getting more personal in their attacks as Congress prepared to leave for a Memorial Day break. Sagar Magani at the White House.
The Trump administration Thursday said a surge of migrant arrivals at America's southern border continues to accelerate, with more than 300,000 mostly Central American undocumented immigrants apprehended or requesting asylum so far in the current fiscal year, which began last October. This is VOA News. As the trade war continues with China, U.S. President Trump announced aid to help mitigate the losses farmers have suffered as a result.
This support for farmers will be paid for by the billions of dollars our Treasury takes in. We'll be taking in, depending on what period of time we're talking, many billions of dollars, far more than the $16 billion that we're talking about.
Flanked by potato growers, ranchers, and dairymen in the White House, Mr. Trump said Thursday the aid will help keep the cherished farms thriving and make clear that no country has a veto in America's economic and national security. He added that trade has been very unfair to the farmers who he says support him politically. This is the second multi-billion dollar bailout the Trump administration has provided to U.S. farmers who have seen Chinese markets for their products dry up because of tariffs China imposed on U.S. goods to retaliate for U.S. tariffs on Chinese products. The U.S. Senate has passed a massive disaster relief bill. AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
The Senate finally passed a $19 billion disaster aid bill Thursday after Republican leaders stripped President Donald Trump's request for $4.5 billion to address the influx of migrants coming to the United States from Central America. The vote was 85-8. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the bill would have passed weeks earlier had the president not interfered.
This bill is almost exactly the same bill that Senator Leahy and I proposed 6 weeks ago.
The bill still needs House approval before it can go to the president's desk for his signature. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Central Africa Republic is observing 3 days of official mourning for Tuesday's massacre of more than 50 people. The president also called on the nation to mourn a 77-year-old nun whose decapitated body was found in a southwestern car. The president is blaming the killings on the militia group known as the 3R and is demanding its leaders hand over whoever was directly responsible for the massacre. UN peacekeepers have stepped up patrols in the area around the northwestern town. U.S. prosecutors announced on Thursday new criminal charges under the Espionage Act against jailed WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange over his alleged role in what they termed one of the largest compromises of classified information in U.S. history. The charges are not related to WikiLeaks' alleged role in disseminating stolen Democratic emails during the 2016 U.S. presidential elections. An 18-count superseding indictment returned by a federal grand jury in the Eastern District of Virginia accuses Assange of working with former Army Specialist Chelsea Manning to obtain and publish on WikiLeaks hundreds of thousands of highly sensitive U.S. government reports about the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as the Guantanamo Bay prison. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, May 24th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. 75% of Malawi's votes have been counted, and there's a 5 percentage point separating President Mutharika and his challenger.
From what we've collected, we are quite comfortable that as Malawi Congress Party, we are winning, and therefore any result that goes against what we have will not be accepted.
Eisenhower Mkaka is the Secretary General of the Opposition Malawi Congress Party. Kenya's High Court will rule today, Friday, on calls to overturn a colonial-era law against gay sex. East African countries are closer to banning hydrocanoes, cane lightning products, and a Ugandan High Court judge blocked the government's decision to suspend 39 journalists from 13 different media houses.
We really hope the TCC will wake up to the reality that it must not work against the media. It must work with the media for the media to grow.
Sampala Robert is executive director of Human Rights Network for Journalists in Uganda. And the 20th edition of the Zimbabwe Expo kicks off today, Friday, in the U.S. city of Chicago. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi President Peter Mutharika has taken a slight lead in Tuesday's presidential election, according to partial results released Thursday by the Malawi Elections Commission. With 75% of the votes counted, Mr. Mutharika was ahead with 14% of the votes, followed by main challenger Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party with 35%. Chakwera was confident on Thursday that he would win and vowing that he will not accept any attempt to thwart his victory. Meanwhile, foreign election observers issued a preliminary assessment on Thursday, saying that although the electoral process was peaceful, it lacked a level of playing field. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The European Observation Mission says the Malawi Electoral Commission organized the elections well, but despite generally peaceful campaign, the pre-election period was marked with tension. Miroslav Poshi is the EU's mission's chief observer.
What we still see as a problem is abuse of state resources and also a bias by state media.
The EU mission also bemoaned attacks on opposition politicians during the pre-election period. The leader of the Commonwealth Observer team, former South African President Thabo Mbeki, says the election process was well managed, but it is still premature to declare it as fair.
We are not making any judgments. That's a matter that would arise later. When everything has been done, then it becomes possible for the observer teams to say, now given everything that we've observed and seen and heard and everything else, it is possible to say these elections were fair or whatever.
However, some opposition politicians say they have lost confidence in the vote counting process, which is currently underway at the Menitali Center in Blantyre. Ezinihoa Nkaka is the Secretary General of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. The party's leader, Lazarus Chakwera, was about 5% points behind Peter Mutharika in a vote count announced Thursday by the Electoral Commission. Kaka says the party will never accept the results if Chakwera loses.
We've got a state-of-the-art tally center, which is actually collecting the results from across the country. And from what we've collected, we are quite comfortable that as Malawi Congress Party, we are winning. And therefore, any result that goes against what we have will not be accepted.
However, the campaign director for the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, Ben Piri, says it is premature for the party to say anything until the winner is announced.
We got prepared and we did all we could. We mobilized our people to go and vote. It's just hours. It may be 10 hours, maybe 20 hours, but it's just hours away from declaring who the winner is. And as DPP, we're good to go.
The Malawi Electoral Commission is expected to announce the final results by May 29. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
A Uganda High Court judge Thursday blocked a decision by the Uganda Communication Commission, the UCC, to suspend 39 journalists from 13 different media houses. The UCC earlier this month accused the media houses of airing programs that had extremist messages, including incitement of violence for political and other purposes. But observers said the suspensions were a result of the government's displeasure with the media coverage of the arrest and detention of parliamentarian and popular musician Bobby Wine. In his ruling, Justice Mugambi questioned why a case of possible incitement of violence had to be reported to the UCC instead of to the police. Sampala Robert is executive director of Human Rights Network for Journalists in Uganda.
This is a right step in the right direction because issuing an injunction pending hearing of the main application is a relief to us as the media fraternity in Uganda, because we now know that UCC cannot go ahead to implement its arbitrary directive to media houses by forcing them to lay off their topmost management staff members to a tune of 39 within 13 media houses. So with this, however long it takes in court, we know that UCC will not be able to violate this particular court order, because the law talks of regulating the media, not controlling and stifling press freedom as it is now. And so this comes as a very big relief to us as media rights activists in this country.
Does this mean now that these journalists that had been suspended, according to the Uganda Communication Commission, does this mean that they will continue on the job until the case is heard?
Yeah, this certainly means that now the status quo will be maintained. What had happened recently when the National Association of Broadcasters, a body that brings together owners of media houses in Uganda, met with UCC, the communications regulator, it was agreed that the 39 be suspended for 1 month pending investigations into their conduct. But certainly now with a court injunction setting away the orders, it certainly means that they all will be reinstated and continue doing their work until court determines the main application, which is to quash the directives that were issued by UCC. Because by all normal standards, we think that UCC is outside of this mandate and that it is acting in total disregard of the due process of the law.
You know, the judge made an interesting observation in the ruling, saying to the Uganda Communication Commission, and the judge wondered why a case of possible incitement of violence was reported to the Uganda Communication Commission instead of to the police.
This is a very big observation that the court has made. UCC is not one of the security management bodies in our country. UCC is supposed to act and work with the media and supposed to see the media freedom flourish. So this observation certainly means that UCC is embarking on the mandate that it is not within its parameters. And we hope that from the onset now, UCC will appreciate the fact that it is abusing office, is using powers that are not vested in its office, and that it is acting outside of the law. We really hope that UCC will wake up to the reality that it must not work against the media. It must work with the media for the media to grow.
Sampala Robert is executive director of Human Rights Network for Journalists in Uganda. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and today is Friday, May 24th. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is scheduled to begin a two-day visit to Zambia today, Friday, at the invitation of Zambian President Edgar Lungu. This will be the second time that the two leaders have met since Mr. Lungu went on a similar state visit to Cairo 2 years ago. President Sisi is the current chair of the African Union, while President Lungu chairs the Peace and Security Organ of the Southern African Development Community, SADC. The two leaders are expected to hold discussions on deepening bilateral relations between their two governments. Zambian Foreign Minister Joseph Malanji says the two countries enjoy strong diplomatic relations.
As you may know, Zambia has had bilateral ties with the Republic of Egypt from the 60s. Zambia had its bilateral ties from 1965. And if you look back to 2017, His Excellency President Edgar Chagwa Lungu made a state visit to Egypt. So it's sort of a reciprocity visit by his counterpart to come to Zambia. We have quite a good number of things in which we are collaborating with Egypt, mostly in agriculture, in health, pharmaceutical programs that are going on between the two countries. And as you may know, President Al-Sisi is sitting chair of AU, and Zambia is the chair of the organ on SADC, Peace and Security Cooperation. So they have to exchange notes as he comes in.
How significant is this two-day state official visit? And what are some of the areas, if you could throw additional light on the cooperation that it will be highlighting on within these 2 days?
As you may know, Zambia is actually trying to move away from its traditional major export being copper. In our 7th National Development Plan, in the blueprint, we are looking at serious diversification, and the only best avenue is agriculture. And as you may know, Egypt has got the expertise. When you look at Zambia, we have 40% aqua expanse in the SADC region. And look at how Egypt has utilized the little water resource they have from the Nile. We are collaborating in Quadro on agriculture. Egypt has actually got a good farmland where they are doing their research in Zambia. So these things are quite cardinal in our bilateral cooperation.
Security-wise, what is the cooperation vis-a-vis the political stability in the Southern African region or SADC?
On security cooperation, you know, Zambia, like you rightly said, has played a midwifery role in the birth of most of the independence in the countries surrounding us and even beyond. The training of our troops, of course, you have to realize that they've got to train in different terrains. We want to make mention here that we have different officers in our military, and each discipline in the military has got different expertise that they've got to show their prowess for. You must realize that right now Zambia has got 1,000 troops in the Central African Republic. We do not train for local use only. You must realize that even the reforms that are going on at the AU, we are looking at member state-driven legal framework. And this, when you look at our security, our being chair of the organ now, it's just a renaissance of much that we are doing for the region and beyond regarding peace and security.
Joseph Malinche is Zambia's foreign affairs minister. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. For decades, Kenya has hosted refugees fleeing conflict, drought, and persecution in East Africa, including sexual minorities. Most gay refugees hope to resettle outside Africa to Western countries where gay rights are better protected. But while they wait a process that can take years, one group of gay refugees is helping inform and educate others about their situation. Rael Ombuo reports from Keseria, Kenya.
Ugandan refugees Brian Kasali, Raymond Bryan, and Chris Waswa host weekly podcasts from a safe house in Kenya. The men tell their audience what it's like to be a refugee and to be gay, considered a crime in Uganda, punishable by life in prison.
Well, 2009, when Uganda introduced the anti-homosexuality bill, many people left their countries to different countries like Europe. They went to Germany, you know. So for us, we just ran to Kenya just because it was the nearest country to seek refugee.
While stigma is still common, Kenya is considered the East African country most accepting of gays, where refugees can wait without fear for transfer to Western countries with laws protecting gay rights. But the process is complex and can take years, says the United Nations Refugee Agency.
It's the governments of countries around the world, whether it's Australia or Canada or the United States or others, who determine what persons they, how many people they would like to be able to, they can resettle, how many people, what profile, what types of families, what types of individuals.
While waiting to leave Kenya, in 2015, a group of gay East African refugees formed the Nature Network to podcast on refugee and gay issues. Their shows are available on social media and through gay rights networks. The mainly Ugandan men earn a living by selling chicken to neighbors and local eateries.
When you're a refugee, it doesn't mean that your hands are gone. You need to work. If you can't afford living in a camp, and you can afford, because there is urban refugees, if you can afford to live an being an urban refugee, that means you have to do projects.
Kenya's High Court on Friday is set to rule on whether or not to overturn a colonial-era law against gay sex. While the gay refugees at Nation Network welcome the possibility, most say they still want to leave Africa. A change in law might help change some people's views, says Brian, but the overall hatred and discrimination will still be there. Raila Mbur for VOA News, Kisarian, Kenya.
East African countries are set to ban skin lightening products that contain hydroquinone, a medical agent linked to health problems when used in high concentrations. The East African Legislative Assembly last week passed a resolution calling for a region-wide ban on the manufacturing and importation of products containing hydroquinone. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Arusha, Tanzania.
At a beauty parlor in Arusha, a 52-year-old Rose Msele is having a facial treatment. She has been using skin bleaching products since she was a teenager. Women like me want to be beautiful, says Msele. And in the process of looking for beauty, we use things that we shouldn't. At a nearby market, a 32-year-old clothing vendor, Janet Jonisefu, arranges a pile of scarves as the sun shines on her pale brown skin. For years, she was using skin lightening products that contain hydroquinone, a medical agent used to treat dark spots. But Jonisefu stopped the so-called bleaching after she says her skin became fragile. She says that she used beauty products containing hydroquinone and that it badly affected her skin as she started developing patches on her face. Jonisefu says she went to the doctor and was advised to stop using products containing hydroquinone and instead use aloe vera. Skin lightening products often use high concentration of hydroquinone, which can cause skin problems or mixed with other bleaching chemicals become toxic. Ghana, Ivory Coast, Kenya, Nigeria, Rwanda, and South Africa ban or regulate the agent in cosmetic while Tanzania bans imports. The East African Legislative Assembly last week passed a resolution on a region-wide ban of hydroquinone's manufacture and importation. Susan Nakawuki is a member of the Regional Assembly from Uganda.
Hydroquinone is not only used by women, but also men. We've seen men bleaching seriously, even more than women. But it's becoming a problem. If we don't regulate it, it's going to become very problematic.
When used medically, hydroquinone can be an effective treatment for skin discoloration. Some East African lawmakers spoke out against a blanket ban. Aden Abdikadir is a lawmaker from Kenya.
A blanket throwing of a ban on an item which we are generally acknowledging that it is now a content of most cosmetics is going to cause serious trade disruption.
If signed by the heads of state, the ban becomes a law in all East African community states, which includes Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, South Sudan, Tanzania, and Uganda. Moses Havyarimana for VOA News, Arusha, Tanzania.
The 20th edition of Zimbabwe Expo, an annual event for business development, social empowerment, equity investments, and networking opportunities for diaspora Zimbabweans, kicks off today, Friday, in the U.S. city of Chicago amid an economic meltdown back home in Zimbabwe. Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports.
As Zimbabwe's economy continues to tumble due to lack of foreign direct investment, which has created a shortage crisis of cash, fuel and other basics, some Zimbabweans in the U.S. are hoping to generate some viable solutions through the annual business forum, Zim Expo. The event's co-founder, Kwai Tincube, says he is hopeful they will record significant business deals while also entertaining participants.
We are actually celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. The objective of Zim Expo was twofold. One branch of Zim Expo had to do with the business entity, empowering the small businesses from Zimbabwe, those who are living in the diaspora. We would help the Zimbabwean business people by bringing the market to the Zim Expo venue, exposing their businesses to the market. That was the primary objective, and it still is today.
Ncube, a medical practitioner who has been living in the U.S. for more than 30 years, says although senior Zimbabwean authorities are unable to attend the CS event, the country's representatives based in Washington, D.C. will be issuing birth certificates and passports to Zimbabwean citizens. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service, I am Gibbs Dube.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Poland, where the 2019 FIFA Under-20 World Cup got underway on Thursday. Four African teams are representing the continent at the tournament. The young Teranga Lions of Senegal kicked off their campaign with a triumphant 3-0 win against Tahiti. It took only 9.6 seconds for forward Ahmed Sagna to get the fastest goal in the history of the tournament. The 19-year-old netted a hat-trick to secure all 3 points and a perfect start for the Senegalese. Later today, Nigeria's Flying Eagles will face an uphill task as they trade tackles with Qatar. Andrew Randa is the media officer of the Flying Eagles, and he says the boys are ready to put up a brilliant performance.
Everybody's just geared up and super excited to go into the game against Qatar. The players are actually, you know, really psyched up for the game. A lot of them keep talking to themselves that, you know, they really want to, you know, do Nigeria proud, do themselves proud, make their families proud too. So everybody knows what's at stake here, and we're not just here to make up the numbers.
On Saturday, Panama will meet Mali, while the Amajitas of South Africa will test their might against Argentina. And now to the FIFA Women's World Cup. The South Africa women's national team players could earn the biggest payday of their careers at the FIFA World Cup in France and could walk away with almost $70,000 each. South Africa Football Association President Danny Jordan announced on Thursday that the Bayana Bayana players and their Bafana Bafana counterpart would for the first time earn the same amount when they participate in the FIFA Women's World Cup and in the African Cup of Nations, AFCON.
Bonus for players when they go to a major event like the World Cup, like the African Cup of Nations, it's always a source of tension, debate, and huge challenge. And we thought it was important that as the team leaves tonight, that everything must be sorted out.
And to East Africa, where the Kenyan national football team, the Harambee Stars, will now play Democratic Republic of Congo in Madrid on June the 15th, replacing the earlier planned match between Kenya and Gambia in Paris on the same day that has since been shelved. Meanwhile, the national team coach Sebastian Migni says the door is not shut on any player for the African Cup of Nations as he's still weighing his options ahead of the tournament in Egypt next month.
Also, pragmatic. If I discover a good one, I can put him in my finalist. I'm not afraid about it. And after, for next week, we will reduce at 26 because we will travel with only 26 players.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Malawi President Peter Mutharika has taken a slight lead in Tuesday's presidential election, according to partial results released Thursday by the Malawi Elections Commission. And that's it for this Friday, May 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news,
features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.